The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Another week is off and running. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Later on in the show, we'll be going through some more emails. I think we got through quite a few on Friday's show, so we're trying to play catch-up here, and we'll get through some of those in just a bit. Also, I'll update you on another successful repeat program that played over the course of this weekend, and you'll be excited to know that it resulted in quite a few more copies of Mystery of the Ages being mailed out, or I guess that's probably happening today and tomorrow, and took a couple of calls myself on the Watts line, so we'll update you coming up in the second segment, as well as a few extra emails. As I say, well, over the night, at least here in the UK, they had the second debate in the U.S. presidential election. Of course, the weekend was unbelievable in many ways. It looked like because of an obscene interview from 10 or 11 years ago that it looked like Donald Trump's campaign was on life support. And then I guess he pushed back in the debate last evening, and depending upon I guess who you read or follow, some are saying that maybe he bounced back and kept his campaign alive with his performance last night. As it happened, I woke up earlier than I usually do and thought that it probably got me a little bit wired once I started thinking about it, but I thought that the campaign, or rather the debate, was probably going on at that moment. I got up, I checked the UK TV guide, and was surprised to see that it was on one of the stations here on the Freeview channels that are available. Then I realized that my TV was not working at the moment, so was able to get a live stream of the last 30 minutes or so of that debate. Judging by what I read after the fact, it appears as though the more seedy content was in the first half hour or so. But basically, at least that first section of the debate, from what I read, boils down to who has more sins than the other, who's the most flawed candidate. That's the way that Donald Trump pushed back against Mrs. Clinton. In that, well, I have my sins, but you have more. That's what it's come down to. And you know, one thing I've thought about more, perhaps because I'm stationed abroad, is just how much this campaign, or how it's being viewed internationally. As I said, it was right here on TV. Of course, it was in the middle of the night for us here in the UK, but it's making the rounds on the news cycles here just as sure as it is in the United States. And in watching one little exchange after the debate, I think it was on Fox News, these were some commentators that were very clearly pro-Trump, and just how excited they were, jubilant, at seeing Donald Trump finally, in their view, finally push back at the Clinton machine, and finally exposing the Clinton family for what it is, and they're excited. And of course, there's supporters for the Clintons that are excited to see Donald Trump being exposed, as he was Friday night with that video clip. And yet, what must the rest of the world think as they look at the United States? My wife had a discussion with someone just here in the community, because once they realized she was American, they, of course, wondered about the election, asked her if she was going to be voting, and of course she said no. And then this individual, not knowing, of course, why she said no, this individual sympathized with her and talked about just how dreadful both of the candidates are. And again, I've referred to this piece that Joel Hilliker wrote for The Trumpet a few months ago, just about how that this election really is coming down to who is going to be the one that people hate the least. It's Isaiah 3 being fulfilled. Isaiah 3, you can go through the prophecy and see there what God says that we're going to have in the last days, the kinds of leaders, quote unquote, because God says there at the first of that that chapter that he's going to take away true leaders from our nations. And this is what we're left with. Children, basically, hurling insults at one another. Quite a few reports talking about just how this is, well, one of the worst in history. And there were some contentious debates in centuries past, for sure. You can imagine just the strong opinions between individuals like John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, or maybe Lincoln and Douglas 80-some years later. But the content, I mean, the content that they're divided over today, and the things that both parties are involved in or have been engaged in, when you compare it to election cycles of the past, what a shame. What a spectacle. And it's out there on display. It's being beamed across the earth. You can get it on television right here. You can get the live stream anywhere. And then, of course, all the follow-up coverage. The United States of America, all of its dirty laundry, just hanging out there for everyone to see. It's no wonder, I'll read to you here in a second, it's no wonder that madmen like Putin are out there saying, hey, we've got an opportunity here. Of course, he sees it in the short run. He sees the opportunity as a lame duck president, the current occupant of the White House, that's not doing anything in response to Russia's aggression. But then once that individual's out of the White House, I mean, what's next? It's one of these two. The spectacle goes on in the United States, even as the rest of the world comes through one earth-shaking development after another. National Review has a piece here called The Guns of October. It makes a similar point as George Friedman did a while back about all of Eurasia and just how that these many hotspots and conflicts that they're beginning to spill across borders, or they're beginning to connect. Here at the National Review, it says the Russian objective, this speaking of Syria, picking it up in the middle of the piece here, the Russian objective is clear. Vladimir Putin wants to rescue Bashar Assad, preserve access to warm water ports, embarrass America, and become a player in the Middle East. What is less certain is America's objective. We want to destroy ISIS, and we say we want Assad out, though how that can be accomplished at this point without risking open war with Russia is unknown, as is who rules a divided, ravaged Syria after the total collapse of its government. We're flying behind. And the problem is much larger than the Middle East. A rudderless America in a moment of transition is heedlessly reacting to events rather than influencing them. What Halford Mankinder dubbed the world island of Eurasia is ringed by wars, both hot and cold, from the Baltics to the Donbass, across the Shiite Crescent, along the Indo-Pakistani border, through the South and East China Seas. Putin, it says, tests NATO, fuels guerrilla war in Ukraine, and pummels Aleppo. Turks fight ISIS and Kurds. America fights ISIS in Syria and Iraq. Iran sends aid to Hezbollah, militias to Syria. and swift boats to the Straits of Hormuz. India and Pakistan battle over Kashmir. Americans fight in Afghanistan. China builds its forces in the Pacific. North Korea flirts with nuclear war. This planet, it says, is laced with dynamite. The planet is laced with dynamite. And all it can take, as this article is bringing out, is one little spark for the whole thing to explode. Now, we know the events that will bring about that spark. And they're going to center around Jerusalem. Here, of course, he's saying that, you know, what if Syria explodes into world war? And so these commentators are just getting closer and closer to the reality that's spelled out in your Bible. Now, there's some specifics, as I say, that we know, which they don't. Because of what Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24, because of what's laid out there in Daniel 11 and other passages, we know what will set it off ultimately. In any event, I mean, he does a good job here with this National Review piece to just show what's happening in all of Eurasia, really in all the world. What happens if there's one little miscalculation, he says? And then look at the leadership crisis in the United States. The fecklessness. He talks about some of that later on in the piece. And then later it says, nor is it only our elites, we must worry about. Putin, Assad, Erdogan, Khamenei, Xi Jinping, Kim Jong-un, it says, these men feel that they have the upper hand. U.S. and Russian officials and analysts tell the New York Times that Putin's strategy is to move aggressively in what he sees as a prime window of opportunity, the 4 months between now and the 2017 presidential inauguration. And so all that America is going to be consumed with, certainly for the next 30-some days, but then even after that, is this transition of power. These 4 months, but look at how Putin's viewing this. Here again are these Fox commentators just absolutely giddy. Finally, Trump pushed back. He's on the rise. He survived the crisis over the weekend. And now he's back. And now he's got the Clintons on their heels. This is what we've been waiting for. It's time for Republicans to come together. It's time to unify, just like the Democrats always do. This is what they were saying. Even as the rest in the world look at America and say, wow, is this really the United States of America? What an opportunity! That's the way they're viewing it. That's the way they're viewing it. Says the other despots must think the same way as Putin, that is. They must think the same way. And then as he goes on to say, what if there's one miscalculation? Well, he paraphrases Neil Ferguson's book from 2006, talking about the similarities between today and the lead up to World Wars I and II, which was just really one great war with a pause in the middle. And bringing out some of the key points of Ferguson's book, again, pointing to the similarities today compared with World War II. You have ethnic conflict all over the place. Shia versus Sunni. You have the Muslim versus non-Muslim. You have the refugee crisis and how that's reshaping the politics of Europe. All these anti-immigrant parties on the rise in Germany, in France, in England, in the United States. There's ethnic conflict. There's economic volatility. This piece brings out that 7 million American men, middle-aged to young, 7 million of them, have dropped out of the workforce just in the last 7, 8, 10 years. what happens with this kind of economic volatility. You talk about a spark, one spark that can set things off. Well, then the third factor, again, this man paraphrasing Neil Ferguson's work from 2006, is that you have empires in decline in the lead up to the first two wars. You had the British, the Ottoman, the Russian empires entering into their decadent phase. And what do we see today? Do you think maybe last night's debate, particularly the first 30 or 40 minutes, do you think maybe that indicates to the rest in this world that the United States is entering a decadent phase? It says here, might the American-led post-war order of NATO, free trade, the UN, EU, and the U.S. armed forces as guarantors of the commons of sea, air, space, and cyber be coming to a similar turbulent, self-inflicted end? The National Review says here, a few years ago, I would have said no, but now I'm undecided. I mean, a few years ago, I would have said, well, of course, at least you have American power to maintain the stability across the globe. Now I'm not so sure. Now I'm undecided. He says here, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan clearly punctured national self-confidence, soured elites, and the public on intervention. They also gave us the ambivalent leadership of President Obama, who destabilized one alliance after another as he cut defense budgets, mishandled Russia, emptied Guantanamo, labeled half measures a pivot to Asia, drew red lines and ignored them, turned the Department of Defense into a social justice lab, belittled our friends, and catered to our enemies. The result is an anxious Europe, a blood-stained Middle East, growing dangers to U.S. forces in the Pacific, and an inward-looking America that I fear has neither the strategy nor the will to sustain a global order it paid so much in blood and treasure to obtain. We've just let it all slip away. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, talked about how all of these blessings that have been bestowed upon our peoples, the United States and Britain in particular, that once he fulfilled his promise and gave us all of those blessings, that prosperity, that power, that he was then under no obligation to continue blessing our peoples, our nations. Once he fulfilled his promise, then it was on us. Then it was on us to keep those blessings, to keep those promises, that power. And well, look at what our sins have brought about. What a spectacle last night. How could the weekend have been any worse as far as the current state of politics in the United States? The decadence is on display. We are seeing a superpower in decline. This is life in the post-American world, as we've written at the Trumpet. Another one here from the Spectator. Could the conflict in Syria lead to World War III? There's quite a few asking this. And here again, look at the American people, like the previous article brings out. I mean, we're so war-weary. Think of Ehud Olmert, the former Israeli leader who said to, I forget how many years ago this was, the early 2000s, I guess, we're tired of war, we're tired of fighting. And that's the same sentiment you could say for the majority of Americans. That's what brought on this ambivalent leadership of President Obama. Of course, he's been very aggressive and strong in a lot of ways, particularly in dismantling the traditions, the basics, the structures of the U.S. Constitution at home, but the weakness abroad, mishandling Russia, as it says here, Asia, erasing the red lines, Well, more and more are riding along these lines. Relations between America, this is back to the Spectator, relations between America and Russia are worse than at any time since the Cold War. This is where we are, just 20-some years after the Cold War supposedly ended. It says the U.S. broke off its Syria talks with Russia last week. Russia, meanwhile, is ramping up its angry rhetoric, accusing America of directing a terrorist international to prevent the Assad-Putin alliance from winning. The U.S. ambassador to the U.N. has accused Russia of barbarism. It says the British are involved, too. I mean, they're there. The rhetoric is ramping up. And then meanwhile, the Russian military has announced that it's sending a battery of these S-300 air defense systems to Syria now. The Spectator says this is not World War III, but it's starting to look like a new Cold War, for sure. I mean, for sure it is. And where is it all leading? Russia's moved right back into the Middle East. And, of course, this is a region that Iran has been working in recent years to dominate. And you see Iran's fingerprints all across the region now. This one here from The Guardian. It says, amid Syrian chaos, Iran's game plan emerges, a path to the Mediterranean. After 12 years of conflict in Iraq and an even more savage conflict in Syria, Iran is now closer than ever to securing a land corridor that will anchor it in the region and potentially transform the Islamic Republic's presence on Arab lands. Who told you about all of this? Years ago! More than 20 years ago, that Iran would be the king of the south, that Iran would take over Iraq. And now here they are. They've got Iraq. Their corridor is going to go through Syria. It's pushing all the way to the Mediterranean, this Iranian corridor, because it understands the tremendous strategic value of the sea gates. It's on the march. It's expanding its empire. And it quotes this European official saying how hard Iran's been working at this for many years. Patiently, step by step, one chunk of territory after another. It says here, interviews during the past 4 months with regional officials, influential Iraqis, and residents of northern Syria have established that the land corridor has slowly taken shape since 2014. It's been assembled under the noses of friend and foe, the latter of which has begun to sound the alarm in recent weeks. Finally, there's some saying, hey, are you seeing what's happening? We better sound the alarm. We were doing that 20-some years ago because God tells us in the prophecies. He talks about a king of the south. That king, I mean, well, others have come around now. They see it. They see it. It talks about Soleimani's impact on this, the Quds Force, of course, the Revolutionary Guard, how that Soleimani's been behind this, running the wars in Syria and Iraq for the Iranians, for their proxy groups. The Guardian says here, finally, it involves demographic shifts which have already taken place in central Iraq and are underway in northern Syria, and it relies heavily on the support of a range of allies who are not necessarily aware of the entirety of the project but have developed vested interest in securing separate legs. And so they're on their way to the Mediterranean with this Iranian corridor. Now, with respect to Syria, we know that Iran is not going to gain control of Syria. We know this from Bible prophecy, but still, as this article brings out, I mean, it's just showing how ambitious they are to gain strategic advantages. How ambitious they are to gain control of sea lanes. Look at what they're doing in and around the Straits of Hormuz. And then there's this from just over the weekend. The missiles that they fired toward that U.S. warship near Yemen. Now it's all over. The Persian Gulf and then the Suez now. Two missiles, this is from the Wall Street Journal, two missiles apparently fired from Houthi territory inside Yemen landed near an American warship patrolling off the country's coast, missing the ship and causing no damage or injuries. But still, it says later the origin of the two missiles appeared to be from Houthi-controlled territory in southern Yemen. Now, it's important that you go and you look at a map and just see what's transpiring with this land corridor, with these sea gates that Iran is attempting to gain control of, all of its harassment. They're in these waterways, firing at U.S. ships, harassing U.S. Navy vessels, taking them captive in some cases. From Stratford, it says here, an attack on a ship in the Red Sea raises fresh concerns about Yemen's civil war. The apparent use of an anti-ship missile by Houthi fighters, if confirmed, would indicate that the group has acquired new capabilities, raising questions about the security of shipping in the waters off the Yemeni coast and the effectiveness of an arms embargo against the Houthis. Yes, this does raise a lot of questions about the security of shipping in these sea gates or these sea lanes. Well, and then it talks about the arsenal that the Houthis now have. Again, backed by Iran. And how effective is the arms embargo against these Houthi fighters if they're now firing away at ships, U.S. ships? My father wrote an article over a year ago. This was in The Trumpet back in April 2015 about Iran getting a stranglehold on the Middle East. And again, you talk about, as I've said before, you look at The Trumpet, whether you look at that article from a year and a half ago or go back further, 2012, is when we came out with the Ethiopian prophecy article, or it might be Ethiopian and Libya, I forget the exact title. But then he's also talked about it on television. I'll play a clip here in just a second. But before that, of course, you go back all the way to the mid-1990s. And the King of the South booklet, it's laying it all out there for you well in advance, even at a time when people would have surely scoffed. Radical Islam dominating the Middle East, headed up by Iran? You talk about that in 1995, 1996. It just would have been brushed aside. Oh, that's crazy. That's ridiculous. And now look at what they're saying at the National Review or at the Telegraph or at the Guardian. Here's what my father had to say in August of 2012. This is a little over 4 years ago, clip one.
If Iran can establish control of the Red Sea, one of the most important energy and trade routes in the world, it will have Saudi Arabia surrounded and Europe and the West at its mercy.
That's talking about them controlling the Red Sea. And now here they are, firing missiles from Yemen at U.S. ships in the Red Sea, as Stratford brings out. If this is true, it raises questions about the security of shipping in the waters off the Yemeni coast. It raises a lot of questions. Notice what else my father had to say, clip number two.
What Iran really wants is control over the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, and they have a strategy, and you'll see that very clearly. And can you imagine if a nation gets control of that sea lane through there, the Red Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, can you imagine what that is going to add to their military might? Now, it's not going to turn out like Iran thinks it is, but I'll tell you, there is going to be a power that's going to get control of that trade route, and it's going to shock the world because they do get control of it. And I tell you, Britain and America both have helped change the course of the Middle East, and really much of it for the worst.
That was from my father's program 4 years ago, August 2012. And here it's been brought on largely by the United States and Britain, U.S. in particular. Look at how ineffective and weak the United States has been. And from the beginning, we told you about the emergence of the King of the South, and then further on into the story after 9/11, when America did finally lash out, we told you it wouldn't work. We told you they're not going after the head of the snake. We told you that Iran would emerge stronger than ever. Stronger. Even after this so-called war against terrorism, that Iran would emerge stronger. And who can deny this today? As you see this Iranian corridor pushing its way through to the Mediterranean, and now the Houthi rebels firing at U.S. ships in the Red Sea. And that's what my father was talking about on that program 4 years ago. They have a strategy. They have a strategy. And it's not going to turn out for them like they think it is. Because, as you well know, Europe's going to have something to say about it. Germany's going to have something to say about it. But America sure doesn't. America's not doing anything. America's erasing red lines. America's being pushed around by Putin and by the mullahs. The only strong position that America takes with respect to anyone in the region, as I covered with you last week, it's against Israel. You think about all this that's going on. I don't want to sound repetitive here. But you think about that, all of this is going on in the region, and America reserves its strongest condemnation for Israel because it's building 98 houses. It's building 98 houses in Shiloh, where the Ark of the Covenant rested for a time. Back in the days of ancient Israel, America has completely gone missing. That's why it's not mentioned in Daniel 11 and verse 40. It's just the kings of the south and the kings of the north, or rather the king of the south and the king of the north. In that article from a year ago, Iran gets a stranglehold on the Middle East. My father talks about how Yemen is so strategically vital, which makes this Houthi rebellion so significant. And it really reveals Iran's strategy, as my father mentioned in that clip I played for you. They're trying to gain control of the vital sea lane from the Indian Ocean through to the Mediterranean. And then on land, they're pushing the corridor over through the through to the Mediterranean. My father, in that article from April 2015, he talked about just how critical that passageway is and how that you can, well, I guess from the narrowest point, there's just an 18-mile gap there that takes you into the Red Sea. Strategically critical, this passageway. And really the strategic importance is equal to that of controlling the Suez Canal at the north side of the Red Sea. He says here, this is from April 2015, nearly 10% of global seaborne oil supplies pass through the gates of the Red Sea. Roughly 20,000 ships pass through the Suez Canal and Bab el Mandeb each year, an average of 55 per day. It says about 15% of global maritime trade travels through the Red Sea. It says now that Iran controls Yemen, it can virtually close or open this spigot on Middle East oil bound for Europe, and Europe is taking notice. Europe is taking notice. It sees Iran's strategy, and of course Germany has a strategy of its own. My father takes you through quite a lot of history in that piece from April 2015, pointing out the strategic significance of this waterway, and then says because of this Houthi rebellion, now rather suddenly, Iran, the world's greatest state sponsor of terrorism, has basically become the gatekeeper to this strategic asset. I mean, this is something that's threatening the peace of the world. And yet you listen to the State Department from last week and you think that building 98 houses is threatening the peace of the world. This is threatening the peace. What's happening in Syria is threatening the peace, in Iraq. And all these international acts of terrorism. We could go on and on and on. Further on in the article, it says the Houthis' takeover of Yemen was not just a grassroots revolution. It was part of a deliberate and calculated Iranian strategy to conquer the Red Sea. This is from April 2015. I'd urge you to go back and study that article. And then, as you'll read in that piece, go and get your Bible and look at what God says in Daniel 11. The strategy, I mean, it's prophesied there. It was prophesied thousands of years before it actually was fulfilled. Now we're seeing it being fulfilled. Not just Iran's strategy, but the King of the North's strategy as well. Daniel 11:40 says, at the time of the end shall the King of the South push at him, and the King of the North shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. And so we've been saying for so many years now, it's almost 25 years, 22, 23, 24 years, that the King of the South would be headed up by radical Islam, led by Iran. The King of the North, of course, is the German-led European power. And my father, in that piece from a year ago, year and a half, he said it may be that this push, the push we just read of there in Daniel 11, it may be that this push could take place in the very area of Yemen or the Gulf of Aden. Notice what Michael Seagal wrote for the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. He said in 2014, if the Shia rebels gain control of the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, Iran can attain a foothold in this sensitive region, giving access to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal, a cause of concern not only for its sworn rivals Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and the Gulf states, but also for Israel and European countries along the Mediterranean. Arab commentators in the Gulf have warned in recent years about this Iranian push. Those are his words. He used the word push. Iran is pushing. What a strategy. It's a pushy strategy as they aim to gain control of these sea gates, as they push that corridor over to the Mediterranean. I mean, this is building to war. The peace of the world is being threatened. That's what's happening. Even as this spectacle in the United States continues on for another few months, perhaps, the world is arming itself, particularly in and around this Eurasian region. In the article my father wrote, he said to the readers, look, go get a map. Just look at the map and see where this is headed. That factors into this as well. I mean, not as prominently as the prophecies of God. That's the framework. And we go from there. But then look at geography. Look at history. Connect all the dots. You can see the strategy as it plays out. You can see the strategy as it plays out on the map. He says Yemen is just a short 18 miles across the water to Eritrea, which was part of Ethiopia until as recently as 1994. Controlling these nations could give Iran virtual control of the trade through these seas. Now you can keep reading in Daniel 11 and read more about Libya and about Ethiopia. There's also actions going on there that are prophetically significant. And my father discusses all of that in that April 2015 article. This strategy, he says, finally, this is the April 2015 piece, it's not far-fetched to envision Iran using its power to control the flow of oil out of the Middle East. He says the supreme leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini, has threatened as much. Iran is aggressively securing its foreign holdings along the Red Sea and boasting about how it could use them. This is the nation the United States has really worked hard these past 7.5 years to make peace with, to reach out to extend an olive branch to. And of course it resulted in the Iran nuke deal from January 16th earlier this year, and how that the United States just absolutely bent over backwards to give Iran everything it was asking for and more, and then deceive the American people along the way, coming up with a false narrative in order to sell the deal to Congress, to the American people. And now Iran's on the march. It's flush with cash. It's building up its arsenal. It's lengthening the corridor, hoping to get all the way through to the Mediterranean. And now with these latest belligerent acts, it's making its intentions clear for all to see. I mean, as Stratford pointed out, the strategic importance of this. I mean, if this is true, as Stratford said, then, well, what does it mean? It raises all kinds of fresh concerns, as they pointed out. It raises questions about the security of these shipping lanes, these waters, right off the Yemeni coast. Pretty amazing, all that's happening. We'll go back, and as I say, that's articles from April 2015, my father's program. I have it here in my notes somewhere. It's August 26th, 2012. That's the program titled Ethiopian Prophecy. If you watch that, you'll get a little bit more, as you will in the article, on what's happening across those straits from Yemen over into Ethiopia and Eritrea and so on. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us this week. Keep those emails coming in. Coming up in the next segment, we'll be rolling through a few of those emails and also updating you on the requests that have come in for the program that we played here in the UK over the weekend. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program.
We just to wrap up a few things from the previous segment, we heard a message from one of our own here at KPCG, Brian Davis, a couple of days ago, talking about just the darkness that that is setting in on this earth today. He went through a section here in Ephesians 5 where Paul said to the brethren that, you know, they had come out of the world and into the true church of God. Ephesians 5:8 says, but you were sometimes darkness, but now are you light in the eternal. And then it says, walk as children of light. Walk as children of light, proving what is acceptable unto the eternal. And Paul said in verse 11, to not have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but to reprove them. How do you reprove those works of darkness? Well, you do that by living in the light. It says over in John 3 that Jesus came into this world. He came as the light of this world. And yet men rejected him because men love darkness. And so it's left to a faithful few to really let the light shine. God's light. As Jesus said that we should in Matthew 5. Be an example. Paul says, just to finish this passage, for it is a shame even to speak of those things which are done of them in secret, but all things that are reproved are made manifest by the light, for whatsoever does make manifest is light. He says, wherefore, he says, awake you from sleep and arise from the dead, and Christ shall give you light. That's the thing. God will give us light if we wake up. If we respond to this truth, if we act on this. I was saying last week, and we've got another program coming out on this for video or for television, that it's easy for some, even some that maybe listen to this program, to see the evils of this world, to see the darkness setting in, and to even see the need to change and to come out of this world. But then how many are really using the power of God's Spirit to make those changes, to actually live a new and different way, to actually become children of the light? So much darkness in this world. This world needs God's people to be illuminating as never before. Well, that's why we need to get as many copies of Mystery of the Ages out there as possible, and we advertised it again on the program here in the UK over the weekend, the most important book since the Bible. Many of you are familiar with that program. We originally played it last August, so about 14 months ago. We ran a repeat of it 2 months later, or 3 months later in November, and then again in April of this year, and then again in June of this year, and then again this past weekend. And this weekend we got 199 requests for Mystery of the Ages. So with the residual requests to come in this week, that means that for the fifth time, this program will bring over 200 requests for Mystery of the Ages. 200 people. I took, as I mentioned at the start of the show, I took one of these calls myself Saturday morning. And it was actually from a lady who was sitting there with her sister. And the lady I was talking to, she wanted a copy. And then she said, can my sister also order while we're on the line? And so she gave her the phone and I took her information. And then it came back to the first lady, who then asked about some basics with respect to God's plan. And she had quite a few things that were actually right. She says, now I've called other programs before and they can't really seem to answer my questions. But when I read the scriptures... And she went on to talk about the resurrection from the dead, about the coming rule of Jesus Christ. And I listened to her for a time, and then at the end I said, "Well, you've got quite a few things right, but there's some other things that you need to fill in the gaps." And that's why Mystery of the Ages is the perfect book for you, because it gives you this masterful overview of God's purpose and plan. And she was very excited to just talk to someone that knew something about the Bible, because that's so uncommon today. The world is filled with darkness, and Mystery of the Ages will open, it will open your eyes to the truth. But it's got to be something that we act on. Another lady called one of our other operators. She told him that, "Well, I just crawled out of bed and happened to turn on the TV, and I never watch religious programs, but this one was different." And she went on to explain that she doesn't even own a Bible, but that she's going to continue listening to this show and that she'd be happy to receive Mystery of the Ages. So here's someone that doesn't even have a Bible in the house. That's unusual. And is now at the very, very, very early stages of coming to the truth. Maybe she's in a better position even. As Mr. Armstrong used to often say, it's easier to learn from scratch than to have to go through the difficult process of unlearning all of the false doctrines that so many people are quite happy to swallow. Well, 199 total requests. You add that to the last repeat we ran. That's the fourth repeat. The last one brought in 230 requests. April 2nd and 3rd of this year, that's the highest we've had yet, I believe. 279 total requests. Added to the show last November, 220. And then the original airing, 215. 5 times we played this one program. 5 times in 14 months. And it's brought in 1,143 requests in total. If we pick up 17 more residual requests, which is possible, if we pick up that many this coming week, then the four repeats will have actually outperformed the original airing. Pretty amazing fruit for just one program. A few emails here. This one here. To begin with, says, it's the government of God that commands people to do good. This is in response to, I believe it was Friday's program about big government. And this listener says, now man's version of government, called socialism, says to do nothing for yourself. God says to do good, but socialism says don't do anything for yourself and neither help your neighbor. Just stay idle, but believe in their promises and vote for their party and expect that only the government knows what's best for you. And when that fails and people are still discontent, then government will also tell the people who to hate for it and where to riot. Well, he goes on, again, waxing eloquent about that just the evils of big socialist government and how it goes right contrary to God and his way of life, the way of outflowing concern for the good and welfare of others. This one here, this email comes in from Montreal, Canada. It says, about 2 years ago on a Sunday morning, I was watching TV and saw a black and white video clip about concentration camps in World War II. I stopped and watched. It was the Key of David program, talking about Germany and the Holy Roman Empire in prophecy. Perfect timing, it says. 20 seconds before or after the clip, I would have probably continued changing channels. I went to visit your website. What an update to the Bible. So it was that footage block, evidently, that stopped this viewer in his tracks. And he watched. It says, to help you to take this message out, as your father says, I often share TD or Key of David programs on Facebook, not only to friends and relatives, but public, so hopefully more people will know your program. So that's from a listener in Montreal that just came upon our material 2 years ago and is now working to spread the message. This one here from California, it says, many tell of how your program benefits them, and I agree, but I see it in a different way. She says, I'm no longer able to attend services, so I lose so much fellowship with my spiritual family. This program and all of the others provide a sense of fellowship. I'm so thankful to our great God for providing this and the others. I listen on the MP3 or the website SoundCloud here in California. The program and all of you are in my prayers to give this warning to the largest audience possible. Time is so short, and there is so little time to warn the world. This last one here, well, I'll just paraphrase it because I'm about out of time, but she's a listener in Tennessee. She's in a wheelchair, and she said the program on the Holy Spirit last Thursday really did impact her, as she's been doing a lot more of late to try to manage her time better. And she's just she has more time on her hands, given the condition she's in, but she's immersed herself into more prayer and study together with listening to these programs. And she goes on and explains just how it's dramatically impacted her life. Well, if you'd like to email the show, don't forget to send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today as we kick off another week of programming. We'll see you again tomorrow.